Good morning. Honorable Kata would be arriving late. He's just finishing a meeting in the city. Yes.
Thank you very much. Honorable Kata will be joining us late. Those are the apologies that have been tabled. Can I give the indication of here that they are accepted by the meeting? Thank you very much, Honorable Becker, Honorable Menezes. Today we are going to get three presentations. The first presentation is going to be a detailed provincial expenditure and performance report, which we requested in the last meeting. The second presentation is going to be the update on the backlog of the issue of the tax deed. And the last presentation is going to be the progress on the amalgamation of the DFI, Development Finance Institution, in the department. So the presentations are going to go in that order. We are starting with the presentation of the provinces, which without any waste of time, I'm going to hand over to the department to do that presentation. Honorable Kurai, I told you are not well. Even the movement disturbed me. So please can people just sit still. So thank you very much. Development, can we hand over to you to do the presentation on the provincial performance? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. We're not going to waste time. We'll ask the acting CFO to lead us on that presentation. Thank you, Chair. Chair, this presentation deals with the report on the provincial expenditure for the end of the third quarter. We have also included, Chair, provincial performance as at the end of January. We have added a month just to give an indication of what the provinces are doing at the end of January. The presentation starts with the adjusted allocation for the current financial year. It then gives the human settlement development grant performance, and then it then follows the urban settlement development grant performance, and then at the end of the presentation, there are two slides which look at the interventions the department has done to address the challenges we are experiencing with the provincial performance. This chart is the adjusted allocation for the current financial year. It's a 29.4 billion allocation. You will notice at the top is the operational budget of the department, about 700 million, and the rest is made up of grants and transfer payments, which constitute about 97% of the allocation of the department. I'll then look into the Human Settlement Development Grant performance as at the 31st of December 2014. If you look at this slide, Chair, you will notice that the original allocation in terms of the Division of Revenue Act is 17 billion. During the financial year, there were challenges. The Limpopo was not performing very well. And what NIMNEC took a decision on was that we need to reallocate funds from Limpopo to other provinces who are performing so that we may not, as a sector, lose funds to the fiscal. As a result, you will notice that 559.5 million was reallocated from the Limpopo and allocated to the Eastern Cape, as shown on the Eastern Cape received 233.5 of that amount. KZN received 236 million, Mpumalanga received 17 million, and Western Cape received 20 million. The allocation is important for the I want to say that this reallocation surgery last month, and which is very late in the financial year, and but it was allocated and the money has been allocated. This is the performance of the NPS at the end of December 2014, the end of the third quarter. This slide gives an indication of how the expenditure was at the end of December. You will notice here that the allocation is still the same, 17 billion, as shown on the first column. We had transferred by the 31st of December 13.4 billion. Provinces had spent 12.4 billion. And of what has been transferred to them, there was 1 billion which was unspent as at the end of December. And 4.6 billion still had to be spent by provinces from the beginning of January to the end of December. When you look at percentages in terms of their performance, at the end of December we had transferred 79% of the total allocation. And provinces had spent 73% of the total allocation. And that means that they spent 92% of what we had given them. And when you look at the last column, you will notice that there was more than a quarter which still has to be spent, 27% to be spent from the beginning of January to the end of the financial year. This slide gives an indication of how was the situation as at the end of January, a month later. You'll notice here that as at the end of January, I'll not go through the figures. At the end of January, we had transferred 40.1 billion, and provinces had spent 13 billion, and there was 1.1 billion remaining unspent of what had been transferred. But you would also notice just that there were 4 billion still to be spent from end of January to the end of March. That gives you 2 months, February and March, to be spent by provinces. And you will notice in the last column, it was still about a quarter, 24% down from 27, which is still needed to be spent. You will also notice here that in respect of Limpopo, in the previous slide, the total allocation, the original allocation, if I can just go back, was 1.2 billion. And in the terms of this slide, you will notice that it is 659, because it is what was left after the reallocation has been done. And if you look here at the performance in terms of percentages, there is a column called spent as a percentage of total available. You will see that the Eastern Cape was sitting at 77%, and there is a column next to that which is titled spent as a percentage of transferred funds. You will notice that they spent almost 100% of what is the transferred to them. You will also notice on that very same column here that there were about 3 provinces which were already overspending. You'll notice that Eastern Cape had spent almost 100%, Free State was overspending by 1%, KwaZulu-Natal 106 overspending by almost 6%, Mpumalanga overspending by about 2% in terms of what had been transferred to them. You'll also notice here that there are 2 provinces which are right at the bottom. You'll notice that Limpopo is at 42%. And right at the bottom, and followed by Gauteng, 78%. And you notice that the rest were up so there's a gap. Others are doing well, and these 2 are right at the bottom. In terms of the actual delivery, here is at the 31st of December 2014, this slide gives us three things. One, the annual targets. Two, what was delivered. Three, and where is the variance? You'll notice that in terms of the annual delivery targets, the targets are sitting at 39,385. And these are amended targets based on the business plans of provinces as they submitted them. And the in terms of top structures, the total was 101,434,000, and which gives you a total of 140,819. Those are the top targets for the whole year for all provinces. And in terms of delivery, so you will notice that in total, the provinces had achieved 99,987, split between 31,495 cell sites and 68,492 structures. And when you look here in terms of the variance, I will not go through all of them here, but just to highlight a few things. One, you will notice that Limpopo has not delivered sites, service sites as at the end of the period. Secondly, you will notice also that Mpumalanga was overperforming at 1,582. You will also notice that Northern Cape was also overperforming at 295, and the negative. On the overall share, in terms of percentage of performance, you will notice, share that in respect of, let me start with the actual figure. In respect of the total variance of delivery, we were sitting at 40,832. And in respect of service size and unit percentages, you will notice that in respect of service size, we were at 80%, and in respect of a top structure, we're sitting at 68%. On the 31st of January, end of January, the picture is not very different. If you look at actual delivery, it has increased to 108,505,000, made up of 33,836 service sites and 74,669 top structures, giving you a total of 108,505 against the total target of 140,819. And that gives you a variance of 5,589. You'll notice here that in those two provinces, Mpumalanga and Northern Cape, were still overperforming, and Eastern Cape was sitting at a variance of 1,242 in terms of performance, that they were overperforming by that amount. When you look at the individual programs at the end of December, just to give more details in terms of individual programs, this is the financial linked institutional subsidy program. When you look at the financial linked individual subsidy program, when you look at its performance check, when you look at the annual target, the target was 1,076 units for the year, and 51.8 million was set aside to fund that. And when you look at delivery performance, you will notice that as at the end of December, we're sitting at 472, and the actual expenditure was 20.1 million. This program, Jay, I must admit, is the worst performer. We are not doing well at all as a sector in this program. The next one is rectification. In terms of the target was 7,226 units to be rectified, 635 million, 0.957 was set aside for the program. And when you look at actual performance of provinces, you will notice here that we are sitting at 4,867 units actually rectified,
with a total expenditure of 479,683. In respect of OPSCAP Chair, this program Chair is a program providing funding to enable the provinces to address non-availability of capacity. The total budget set aside by provinces was 653,230, and the actual expenditure as at the end of December was 565,692. And the main concern from our side here in respect of the performance of this program, you'll notice, for an example, that Northwest, they had spent more than they had set aside. They had set aside 74.3, but they spent 106,177. If you look at Mpumalanga, they had set aside 19.6, and they spent 57.6 million. Those are our main concerns about this program, and that some provinces have actually overspent on this program. We have raised that with them, and they are particularly Northwest, they have indicated that they have made some errors in respect of allocating the furniture. This slide shows a consolidation of social and rental housing performance as at the end of December. When you look at the actual units targeted and the funds, you notice that the total target was 6,743 units, and there was 1.2 billion set aside. And the actual delivered was 3,347 units achieved, with actual expenditure sitting at 694.4 million. This last chair is just an indication of how much was planned by provinces to be spent on mining towns. You will notice, you will remember, Chair, that there is currently an attempt to try and address the plight and the situation in mining towns. And this gives an indication of what treasury allocated to be spent in mining towns and what provinces had actually decided to allocate to spend on mining towns. If you look at Free State, for an example, there are two towns allocated funding, and you will notice that treasury in total, in respect of the province, allocated 31.9 million to spend, but the province went ahead and allocated actually more, 222,606,000. And when you look at Gauteng, the treasury had allocated 32.7 million to spend in the mining town, but the province allocated more, and they allocated 44.8 million. The picture is the same from province to province. Provinces took a decision that they will actually spend more in mining towns. In terms of the actual delivery, we have not received information from all provinces in terms of their progress in respect of the mining towns. In Free State, we have received information. You will notice that they have achieved 117 units. And they had spent 26.4 million. In respect of Mpumalanga, treasury allocated 43.1 million. They allocated 994, and at the end of December, they had achieved 1,228 units, and they had spent 111 million. And in Northern Cape, treasury allocated 9.4 million. And they allocated 49.1 million, and they had spent by the end of December 8.5 million. And in Northwest, treasury allocated 155. They allocated 231.1 million, with a target of 1,614 for the whole province. And at the end of December, they had achieved 1,668, and they had spent 151,213 million. Within the allocation of human development development grant, there is a portion allocated for disaster relief. Just allocated to specific provinces who had experienced a disaster the previous financial year, who had reported that through the disaster reporting process. For the current financial year, federal allocated to four provinces, KZN, Limpopo, Mpumalanga and Western Cape. The total amount is 185 million. In terms of those provinces' performance, you will notice that they had achieved 738 units. You will also notice here that it's just two provinces, it's KZN and Mpumalanga. And in terms of expenditure, they spent from the portion 125,218,000. And that concludes the Human Settlement Development Fund. In respect of the Urban Settlement Development Grant, the total allocation chair is shown is 10.2 billion. There were rollovers which the metros were allocated, and those rollovers amounted to 583,354,000, giving you a total of 10.8 billion to be spent by metros in respect of the grant. As at the end of December, the National Department had transferred 6 billion to metros, and metros had spent 3.1 billion of the 6 billion transferred. And when you look at what they still needed to spend up to the end of the financial year, they still were facing, or they still needed to spend 7.6 billion, the difference between what they had spent and what was still left in the allocation. You'll also notice here that at the end of December, there was 2.8 billion to be spent by metros of what has been transferred to them. And when you look at planned expenditure versus actual expenditure, we have transferred 58.6% as at the end of December. And they have spent 29.3% in the same period. And when you look at what they had actually spent versus what had actually been transferred to them, you will notice here that they spent 52.8% of what has been transferred to them. And you will notice that they actually differ as well in terms of performance. Right at the top, you have Etiquini sitting at 77.7% of what has been transferred to them, followed by Nelson Mandela sitting at 76.9%. And then you will notice that right at the bottom you have Ekurhuleni, the city of Joburg, and Mangaung. City of Joburg sitting at 33.8%, Ekurhuleni 34.7%, and Mangaung sitting at 38.1%. When you look at where did the money go, where did the USDG go? What did they buy with the money? This slide gives you an indication of where expenditure actually went. If you look into the third column, expenditure on voted funds, you will notice here that of the 2.1 billion spent as at the end of December, 801 million went to sanitation services, 588 million, 378 went to water services, 554.8 million went to roads, stormwater and transport, 282.1 million went to electricity and energy, 208 million went to social services or public facilities, and 493.802 went to human settlement stroke housing infrastructure, 29 million went to waste management or refuse removal. And then lastly, 164.6 went to economic development and planning. And this gives you an indication how Metro spend the USDG. Where is the money actually going? The last few slides check on USDG actually gives you more detail of this consolidated figure. Pay Metro. For an example, this is the Buffalo City municipality. It gives an indication of where they spent the money. If you take this Metro for an example, they allocated $673,289,000. They spent $278,193 by the end of December. And when you look at how was the money spent, we notice that on water they spent $11.5 million, wastewater $61.3 million, electricity $5.3 million, road and stormwater $137.6 million, housing $36 million, transport planning $8.5 million, waste management $4,000, and amenities $2.8 million, environmental services $1.5 million, public safety there was nothing spent. Enterprise Project Management Office, $12.9 million, and Support Services, $124. So this gives you an indication of how the Buffalo City spent the USDG. You'll notice that a bigger chunk goes to roads and stormwater at $137, followed by wastewater at $61.3. And you can go through and see housing follows at 36, and Enterprise Project Management Office takes $12.9 million. It just gives you an indication of how they actually spend the USDG. And when you look at the tangibles and what you buy, you will notice here that if you start at the top, social development and built environment, they indicate that 1,140 sites were serviced. When you look at transport, it gives you more detail on how many kilometers of roads were paved, whether gravel or tarred. It gives you more information. In terms of water, it also gives you more information. I will not go through all of them, and it's really more detailed. It goes down to more and more details in respect of what are the tangibles, where did the money go. Chair, I will not go through all the metros, but I just want to go to the interventions we actually identified that we need to implement. When this performance chair was discussed between the national department and metros and the provinces, these were interventions which were identified which we need to actually implement. The first was that the national department should develop a capacity support program to assist provinces and metros on areas, on issues like their business plan, on issues like their supply chain management issues, because what we found is as you probe to actually establish why this kind of performance. So reasons given, then they gave us an indication that this is what as national department we need to do. Secondly, the provinces was decided and agreed that provinces should provide work in progress to determine the achievement of the set targets in the remaining weeks. The reality here is that we are reporting on what has been finished. We are not reporting on work in progress. And there was an indication that perhaps it would help us to get a better picture if provinces were to give us information on their work in progress. And how many, for example, how many units are at foundation phase? And how many units are at window phase? So that we can get a better picture of what is the situation of work in progress? Because you do see that money has been spent, but you don't see the units coming in because a lot of money is still coming through work in progress. Thirdly, the National Department should upscale its monitoring and evaluation unit for verification of data. This, we felt, is something we need to do as the National Department, that there is a need from our side to upscale our monitoring and evaluation of provincial performance and metros. And the other issues, Chair, which were sort of agreed upon and identified as intervention, is that metros should consider reallocating budgets to moving projects to avoid under-expenditure. Because when we look at their performance, you notice, Chair, that their performance is actually quite low. And what we then raise with them is you need to look at the moving projects and focus more on the moving projects so that you are able to spend your allocation. The other issue, Chair, was that it was identified that there is a need for a metros forum with the National Department to discuss challenges they are experiencing, and that it is not good enough for us to hear right at the end of a particular period that no, we have this problem, that we should have a forum with them where we will meet regularly with metros, that they can raise whatever issues they want to raise, and that we may be able to be in a position to address those issues and in that way unlock whatever challenges they are facing. The other issue was that we need to tighten impact indicators and try and upscale the reporting on that. The issue here, which was emphasized here, is that it's not enough for us to know just where did the money go and how much was spent. And the plea to them was, we need to hear more and more about the indicators and the targets, how many jobs were created by the USDG. And in terms of vast infrastructure, where and what extent and how much was spent on vast infrastructure, as well as basic services. These were interventions which were agreed upon, which at the National Department we had agreed with the metro and provinces that we will look into and implement moving forward. That, Chair, concludes the performance of the USDG. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any additions from
the Chair?
Maybe before
you sign off the Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair. In terms of the provincial performance, there are two provinces where we have major concern in terms of the financial performance, and that is Mopok and Kapin. We have not believed anything has changed. Last week, the chief investment officer of the department camped in Kapin with the DOD and with the CFO, and also assisted by the team from NHPRC. We noted that Kapin still has to spend 1.4 billion rand. That's very significant. So we thought that there are projects that can help us to spend that money before the end of March. We may not be able to meet the targets, the financial targets in Kapin, but I think we would be able to disperse the grants to some of the significant milestones in various projects. The problem in Kapin is not so much about lack of projects. I think the dealing with how to manage the cash flow because of the aspects of the rain, storm, and all those other major disasters. We did the same in Limpopo, Chair. We met with the MEC and the AGD and the team last week. We looked at what needs to be done to spend the 350 million dollars plus. We recovered the cost of 2 years to spend 350 million dollars. And the challenge there is that we have not appointed consultants for the provision of that site. You'll see that they are performing in terms of the infrastructure. They have started as delivery. I think they've delivered more than 1,000 units. That is because contractors started late in November, but they are not appointed for that because we want that we may be affected there. So we met with HDA, we met with what HDA is doing some work for them in the Pupa. We're meeting the MEC again, this is the MEC agency, to find what we've coined as a remediation protocol with the DG, the remediation protocol, and what is to come over the next 2 years. The normal problem of Limpopo is not necessarily going to end now. If the contractors that have been appointed are contracted to spend the 900 million, it means that a substantial amount of next year's budget is already committed in Limpopo. So you will have to find a way to make sure that the impact is not significant. But also we want to make sure that the appointment of those certified contractors is done before the start of the function year. And that is why we ask the HOD and DG to sign a determination protocol. We will be having a monthly steering committee in Limpopo starting from this month, where we will look at all the issues of performance. Those steering committees will be co-chaired by the DG and the HOD of France. But we positive that we will be able to spend the money, but we may not get the non-financial completed target. For instance, the CFO has talked about the milestones. We do pay for the milestones. It's not sure a completed house or a completed certified. Before you show a completed house, there are significant milestones that you have to pay for, like window pillars, rooftop, wall blades. All of those milestones, they take a substantial amount of the grant. But we convince that we spend the money cutting before the end of the year, and we will spend the money to work off, but we may not be able to reach the non-financial terms. In terms of the urban settlements development grant, Chair, you notice that the only two metros that are relatively doing okay in percentage-wise, and that is Buffalo City, so they compare the city at 41%. If you look at that column, which is spent as a percentage of total available, it means that Buffalo City has spent 41.3%. You will notice that Etiquette City has 48.8%. Those are the two metros that are doing relatively okay. We have a problem. In Cape Town, they're sitting at 23.3%. Egoruni 18.4%. Mangaung 24%. We're still left with 4.5 months. But again, we don't want to leave things to chance. 4.5 months is going to go quick. And we don't want to apply for all of us in this time of fiscal constraints. We want to make sure that we spend all the money for the end of the financial year. But most of the metros, as you can see, the only two metros that look relatively okay, the rest, we have every reason to fight. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Maybe just say something about, I know in the last meeting this was asked and I had thought probably something would be said in the presentation, particularly in the view of the performance of the metro. Can you say something about the capacity grant?
Chair, the capacity grant has been transferred to metros. They submitted their business plans, which were amended after the amendment of the Division of Revenue Act and the framework. We transferred last week, then the whole amounts have been transferred to them. So for now, there is no performance to report, as we only transferred last week.
Capacity grant has been transferred last week to metros. I just wanted to say here is the presentation. Honorable member, I'm tempted to actually allow everybody to speak. Actually, I'm not tempted. Honorable Pastor.
Okay. I didn't know that you were upset with me. Thank you. That's on page 7. And it says, oh, mention the mining town. And I'm very much interested on the figures that have been calculated by the treasurer to those respective towns. And then when that money gets to province, then the money goes up. For instance, I'll make an example. I think it was 39 million from Gauteng, and then the province increases to 44, if I'm not mistaken. But in terms of the delivery itself, there's nowhere on your slide to say that because the province has increased that money to 44, so that the 39 that are directed, therefore they also increase the number of units or the number of projects. So I just want to understand. And also, you cannot just have money lying somewhere doing nothing. Surely, there's projects that have been compromised to close that gap, to get to that 44. So I would like to see from your spreadsheet, which projects have been compromised to increase the figure, or where is that money coming from? And then in terms of the disaster relief grant on page 8, I also noticed that there's no annual targets from other provinces and also delivery performance. So I just want to understand that's why. And then in terms of the USDC, so I think you need to be very strict because, you know, this roll over from time to time. I think the metro, they are very comfortable because they know that us are going to spend committing to this money and therefore we're going to spend in the next financial year. I think we need to have, under the department, you need to have a stop on that because I think that is the reason why the USDC is not prioritized because the rollovers are accepted. And then in terms of the, maybe a direct question to you, CFO, are you 100% convinced as the CFO to say this department is spending the money according to the mandate of the department? And then you also mentioned, that is my last one now, you also mentioned in your presentation about Metro Forum. I would assume that the issues that you're going to be discussing in those Metro Forums are the issues that you are already discussing in the MIMNET meetings. Well, I think the MIMNET meeting is the platform where the metros come together, they discuss all the issues or challenges that they are facing. So I don't understand another structure now discussing the same thing that we assume that is being discussed in the MIMNET forum. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Father. Honorable Shalem.
Hello, my question might be general because I was looking at the issue of the Mpompo. It's clear that it's underperforming, but trying to see on the management side of the head, if they look to it, what is really the cause? Because we also, as a portfolio committee, been there, and we saw that what is being present here is what is happening there. What is the cause? Because, you know, it doesn't help us now to say this is happening, but what is the cause? And how can we help as this portfolio committee? Because we were also disturbed when we did the oversight. Some areas we could not go to see because of people complaining about service delivery. And the second one, the issue of the overspending by some provinces like the Eastern Cape. If I can be convinced about the outcome, because overspending, but outcome, are they happy with the outcome or they are only happy about overspending? How do you believe if I can be assisted?
Thank you,
Honorable
Shalem. I didn't want to
tell
you. Those are the days that those are attending.
What I would like to find out is, having received these reports
from the progress reports on the various provinces, is there a mechanism the department has by which they could actually investigate or go and verify if the expenditure meets the performance? Thank you.
Thank you much, Chief. I will start my question on KZN, CFO and CEO. You did mention that KZN as of the end of January has overspent by 179 million. And I want to check, because in the last the last year or so, there was a report that SAB actually spent more than their allocated budget, and which actually has forced them to go out to look for money because they spend money that they don't have. How are you dealing with that, one, the provinces spend the money that they are given and not go over there, so that when the financial year starts, we don't have the problems that the case of Italy has? If you can just clarify for me on that one. Then there's this slide, which makes a very interesting one, on reputation. First off, I'll start with my own province in Congo. There were no units that were supposed to be built, to be rectified. But then the province has spent 2.9 million. No units were rectified, but the expenditure of 2.9, almost 3 million, was done. And the same will go for Northwest and Western Cape. The monies are spent, but then there's no work on the ground. It's either the report is not right or something. I don't know. Then of interest, last year when there was a presentation done on the cost of the PNG house, I think it was around 150,000, if I'm not mistaken, the cost of the PNG house. But the entry stage to rectify one house, it's almost double the cost of building a new one. And I'm very much interested to find out what kind of rectifications that they are doing. Because it looks like it will be much easier to demolish the house and build a new one at a cost of around 160,000. Because now, if I look at this report, it says that the three states, they are spending on average over 300,000 to rectify one house. And also the Northern Cape, they are spending 216,000 to rectify one house. Something there doesn't make sense, considering that the cost of building a new house itself is 160,000. So I think that justification one needs to be looked at and must pay attention to it. But it doesn't make sense that we spend double the cost to justify a single house. I think I'll leave the mining town one to my colleague. Yeah, I think that will be it from here.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the other honorable members have touched most important areas. Maybe what I'm left with is the script. I think I hope the view that area should be performed better. On the ground, there's a lot of need under the program. We know the progress is not that good. I think the units that is helping us to move on that one should really move from that area. So, I'm comforted that on the Gauteng and the Limpopo, there's already measures taken by the department where you have sent your senior leadership to sit with senior leadership in those provinces to ensure that the money spent, money budget is spent in Pattern Housing, and you are saying in the Bombo you are doing everything possible. You also ensure that the money is not going back to the department, to the coffers of the national debt. Yeah. So we hope that that process will assist us. I think on the education, as a colleague has raised points, on this OPSCAP program, you have already indicated that you are focusing on the Northwest and the Mpumalanga. So if you can show indeed that that program. On the mining towns, I think a little bit vague, the process is a little bit vague. We would want it to be more clearer, a problem. It's a problem that we would want to see a difference. It should be in the details. Also, linking with what Member Ghana is saying, there should be value for money. For all your programs, there should be value for money. I think that should occupy your planning and whatever you're doing. There should be a value for money. So I think that we will not effort on the USDG. We are happy that you have also seen that the rest of the metro is really doing fine, and you are doing something about this. We would hope that indeed that metro forum must work in terms of what we have done in the minister and the MEP's meeting as well. So I think you see, this is not the capacity grant only going there now. It's also not having maybe you must indicate the reasons why it was a bit late, but also the plans to ensure that it then capacitates the municipalities to move faster, but also your approach of delegating staff to also address. I think we always want achievement, but I think when there are plans that are done to correct the situation, I think that should comfort us, that at least they have themselves seen the weak areas and they are doing something about them. Thank you very much.
Honorable Mendes, go ahead with
Thank you, Chair. Just to add on to the mining town, as well, we are reporting on complete units. I assume we are reporting on complete units, because once again, the discrepancy in the size is there. Do we have a standard house that we are building, or is it varying from town to town, province to province? Because the cost thereof is, the variance is enormous. And also, I think my colleague had mentioned the difference between the gazetted amount and the allocated funds. It's huge. I'm battling to understand that. And as the CFO just mentioned, the report on what has already been completed, and I think a lot of the non-financial performances, if you look at the USDG report, maybe it's a matter of language, where they're saying to be constructed, to be installed, that means it's still going to happen. So it hasn't happened as yet. That's also confusing me. Has it happened or is it still coming? Is it a report on what has been accomplished or what is still going to be accomplished? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson. On ratification, Gauteng and Mpumalanga, not reporting. I mean, in me, this is the process. So, it gives me butterflies on my stomach, because I don't think that Gauteng, with the big cities, metro, they don't need to rectify certain houses in there. And I would like to Chairperson an elaborated response on why. And that brings me also, when provinces are not performing,
and we have nil or zero reportings, where are the managers from the National Department of Human Settlements that are responsible for those various problems? Quarterly, what are they reporting quarterly? And in 2 months, in relation to prepare for a quarterly report, within the 2 months, what are they reporting? The second part is on the of care, the over expenditure. You reported that you are worried about the over expenditure. You have raised with those provinces concerns, and particularly the Northwest and the other provinces that you mentioned before. But to me, I would like to know, how are they going to offset the shortfall? Because if we don't have those mechanisms, the Solicitor General will come into those metros, to those provinces, and it will be a query from the Solicitor General, and that will come back to you as you allocated the money to those provinces. Because it will be in the metros under human settlements in those metros. The other one, a chairperson, social housing and rental housing, the Ompo as well in Mpumalanga, is not reporting. They've recently been in the Ompo. We've seen people migrating from other small towns to Polokwane. And there's not a single, there's no report, even on the district or the municipality together with the province. From Polokwane alone, as a big city, no social housing, I don't understand it. To me, something is not definite on. And focusing on the disaster and relief, or let me go to a youth capacity grant that has been allocated 2 weeks ago, last week. That means only 3 months for the municipalities, for the metros to spend that money. Really, out of 4 quarters a year, we are giving municipality only 1 quarter to spend money. The money that they were supposed to spend along 4 quarters of the financial year. And this is not the first time we're discussing this. We discussed the budget here, that we, when we joined in May, we raised this issue during that 2014. On areas of improvement, under US issue on metro, the BCM with the metro, this is spending only 4% of waste management and resources. That means that metro in Goliath, in Dak, Amanzi, my young kiddo, they both waste management. If you spend the only 4%, and again, your manager, I'm not going to what the correct position, but I would think someone that is responsible to monitor the provinces and those regions that are under metros within the United Kingdom. What are they doing to monitor what they're spending and the actual implementation of the package? Areas of improvement, your WIT, working progress. They're talking about the provinces, then they have to work with us, then we said we want that, and we supported you to do that. But I would want to see that you say to yourself, you write about yourself, to say that work in progress will form part of your performance indicators and assessment. Because the treasury is able to monitor you. But if you don't say yourself in front, the treasury won't accept that work in progress. The last one, Chair, is Metro Forum. I'm surprised to see we are reporting it as a new thing. My understanding has been for many years in Metro Forum, that used to sit in Stellenbosch. Metros, I can't remember what was this called, but metros, where it's not a mimic, where officials, management of metro, together with National Department of Human Settlements, will meet their quarterly and discuss issues, other than the mimic, because the mimic really are the MECs, although the many they come with their management, but in there are management documentation. And if that is left, then you should say to us, you are reviving that and you are continuing. It is not a new thing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Before I hand over to probably the official to respond and maybe the GM to say a few words on this report, I just wanted to let the members know that according to our program, actually, on the 17th of March, we have actually asked the Department of Health to give us a detailed report on the process on mining funds. What do you think it should be a detailed report? So, from that part, we know that even if we are not getting enough joy in terms of the content, it's in the program. And secondly, and that when you are responding, official, maybe you must also explain to us in terms of the USDG grant, what is the department doing in those networks where they are using the transport team that they are not supposed to be using? Because I mean, it's clear here that we know what the grant is supposed to be, and I think here in this report that we know that it's not supposed to be used. But there's silence on what the department is doing. And maybe as good as gold, it would help us have an understanding of the what the department is doing. So obviously, one of the proposals that probably is going to help us, particularly around our guests, which we will live with the department. I want to put it up front that probably the Hotel Province Department of Human Development was invited to come to the portfolio office, to come here, so that some of the things that we are going to get joy and the department itself is not going to be able to respond to the city. We are here, it's the date that we determine. As they are come here, but we are able to deal with our tech and understand what is happening in our tech. That is the goal. So that there is a report. At least those two areas, the mining town, the Akhalin Bed, we need a detailed report, but how can we need to deal with our tech as a portfolio company, that they have come. Okay, so with the department of course. But can I hand over then to the people and the officials to report to some of the queries and questions. But I thought I'm really good.
Okay, let me start, Chairperson. I just want to say that I think a critical aspect of the report speaks to the issue of human settlement revenue grant, that the provinces in terms of performance, but in a nutshell we have the two provinces which are our weakest link. So I think the committee should be head with the approach that says the easy steering committee that's focusing mainly on the issues of Limpopo. And I think that on its own, it's a plus. And I'm happy with the approach of the committee around the issue of housing going forward. But I think that what is the only issue around the presentation today is around the urban settlement development plan. It still, to us, doesn't speak to the issue of human settlement development plan. Because the USDG is a precursor to the human settlement development grant. So those funds should be used for park infrastructure in the main and informal settlement upgrading matters. At the moment, it's a free-for-all scenario. So it speaks to us as human settlement. We need to set our do's and don'ts of the urban settlement development grant. At the moment, it's still not really spending issues really for money as it stands. I think officials, we raise that issue in terms of the MINMEC, because we saw that issue, and we felt that we need to come up with a particular approach, strict measures to apply on the issue of urban settlement development grant. Thank you. I'm agreeing with you that the mining towns, they need a special briefing. Thank you. Official.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I concur with you on the USDG. Safe to say that the USDG grant was introduced without any specific policy. Mm-hmm. And that is why it is highly contested at this issue. And we try to correct that to Telecom NIMEC, to EMC department. We could not present it to NIMEC, but it still has to go to NIMEC. We all view that the best way to deal with all the connotations in USDG is to pass the policy, to get the policy to be passed. We're clear in the policy about what the grant can buy. It needs to buy bank infrastructure, it needs to buy land for human development, it needs to buy basic services, it needs to buy real pastoral structure, planning, especially dealing with applicants, special planning, and it needs to help us create jobs. Those are five key main areas that the country can help us to do, which are all of our chief elements. And going back to the mining towns, we will come here, Chair. We did a good job last week to the portfolio to the IMC for mining town, which is checked by the president. We presented when I left early here last week, I was running to the IMC to get the position and also to Congress. So we've got that presentation in the ready, Chair, we can forward to you. We can come together with the Department of Performance Monitoring and Admission. And then the question about the rectification in Gauteng, you'll notice that Gauteng hasn't budgeted for rectification in this current financial year. And this is because Gauteng has done a lot of rectification in the past. And I think if you look at Gauteng's performance over the last 10 years, they've done a lot of rectification. I think they've been scaling down on rectification since 2008. We're happy with not budgeting rectification. I think Minister has made it very clear that we need to focus more on creating new opportunities instead of focusing on rectifying the units that didn't go well. We will still do rectification, but it is a balancing act. And in accounting, they've been doing a lot of stuff. They've put a lot of budget into rectification in the past. There was a question about the rollover. Yes, I agree. We have to do everything possible to make sure that there are no rollovers, because we will not be granted any rollover in this climate of fiscal constraints. So it is our responsibility to make sure that we don't go for rollover. Are we spending according to the mandate of the department? I think we are spending according to the mandate of the department. We do quarterly performance reviews. Every quarter we go meet provinces and metros to look at their performance. Most of the questions that you raise here, we raise them very sharply in most of our quarterly performance discussions. Maybe we can share with you how we deal with quarterly performance issues in most of the metros and also the provinces. There was a question about whether we need another metro forum, because you already have Telecom NIMEC and NIMEC. We also have the City Budget Forum, which is chaired by the Treasurer, and it looks at all of these issues. But in human settlements, we're looking at it differently, because there is a significant amount of money that goes to the metro. So we have to deal with the metros, not with the specialties. We want to make sure that, you know, if we are going to perform as a sector, it means that the metro must perform. Because the bulk of the HSDG is spent in the metro. You have 12 billion rand, about 12 billion rand of USDG which goes into the metro. And if you look at the HSDG as well, where it is sent by province, it is in the metro, about close to 21 billion rand that now goes to all the metros. And that's where bulk of the population is as well. So it makes perfect sense that we have that human settlements forum. But we won't be duplicating what we already have. We have provinces there. Technical NIMEC in most cases is about accountability. You go to Technical NIMEC to get the AGD and EDs to account for good performance and also for good performance. And we thought that a forum, even if we have it once a quarter, it will help us to discuss issues about the pipeline. In human settlements, the most important thing is to manage the pipeline of projects. If you have not packaged the project that you are going to implement in 2016, you are already late, because it takes not less than 3 years to get human settlements published properly. So we always look at the 5-year plan, always look at the 3-year plan. And in some cases, you will notice that some of the provinces that are not performing, it is because they have not invested time and money into pipeline planning and packaging. Smithfield is not performing. I think we've stated this. In fact, we made the recommendation, which was raised by the CEO of Energy sitting next to me. And we need to look at the way we are managing this. To share you are aware that part of the fleet program is managed by Energy, but the budget comes from the province. We threatened the province that if this program continues to perform at the level that it is performing, we will then have torchlight that class and ask Energy to manage the whole of fleet on behalf of the department. Because there's no point in discussing the fleet component to provinces and it's not performing the way it's supposed to perform. So we're looking at this because there is a massive demand for care housing. There's a massive demand for this type of subsidy because it's not managed the way we feel that it's being managed. We can ask the CEO to comment on that. Limpopo, Chair, you are aware that Limpopo has not performed for almost 3 years now. And what is referred to is Limpopo Department of Human Services was not under administration. It was only Treasury and other 3-4 departments that were under administration. And we say that there was collateral damage. In other words, Limpopo was affected by association because the administrator didn't only look at those four departments that were under administration. They looked at all the other departments, including this one. As a result, nothing moved. When the administrator took over, he simply wanted to verify what has been done, and they put everything on hold. And that's why they didn't manage to get procurement right for 2 years. They could not appoint contractors last year, they could not appoint contractors this year, and they failed to appoint contractors in 2015. So it's been coming for the last 3.5 years, and that's why no program is performing. Even the mining towns, if we reported zero on mining towns, it's because the budget has not performed for almost 2.5 years. So that's the challenge that we're faced with, and that's why we're asking DG and AJD to sign an implementation protocol. We also recommended that maybe the minister and the MEC must sign what we call an M2 agreement, so that there is a proper structure that will look at the proper performance over the next year or two. I will leave other questions to the the question about Gauteng for the 4 million rand, not only Gauteng, I think this stage as well, you notice that in Machabeng, the first stage is decided to put more budget into Machabeng, but the calculated amount is very small. We allow provinces to do that as long as it's in the business plan. We need to put it into the business plan. If they all view that they are going to prioritize the Chilepuswa district or Machabeng region for the current financial year, they can do that. But the minimum amount for mining towns, what we're doing there, we're allocating that for basic services. The bulk of it is not so much about the toll structure. There's a number you can use the housing grant for stage 1 and stage 2 of the UISP program before you get to stage 4, which is the toll structure. So that allocation, the small as it is intended to prioritize the upgrade of informal settlements. Because in most of the 22 mining towns, you notice that there's a lot of informal settlements are mushrooming. So we prioritize the provision of basic services there. But if provinces wants to increase the budget, they can do that, but they have to follow the right process. The accounting officer must approve the budget, and the minister must approve those plans before we submit them to national treasury. In terms of reporting, we will come back. I think on the 17th of March, we will come and present a holistic picture of what is happening in each and every one of those towns. And then there was a question about the capacity building grant. We dispersed the capacity building grant late because we changed the tax in terms of accrediting the aid metros. The bulk of that grant was intended to help the metros once accredited. So there was an assumption that they would be accredited, and then they can use the grant to appoint some of the professionals that they would need. But that cannot be used as an excuse for poor performance because nothing has changed. Some metros have performed in the previous year. All what this grant is intended to do is to help them to package the projects. Some metros are managing a budget of 40 billion. and really to think about, to follow up our capacity in a metro that is managing a 40 billion rand, because they can get the capacity from other departments within a metro. For instance, if you look at George municipality, they have not built up technical capacity in their departments. But what they do, they use the capacity in the engineering services to manage projects in human settlement. So I think we should, the discussion of the grant was intended to help us to deal with accreditation issues. Poor performance, if networks are not performing, they need to account properly, and if they cannot use capacity grant, they have an excuse for poor performance. There was also a question that I will ask my committee to report on, which is the one about the Oscar in the Northwest. We can report on that. Northwest, they have promised that they will correct that. There was a mistake that they made to use the Oscar budget, but they feel that before the end of the financial year, they would have spent 5%. They won't go above that. They used some of the money, the Oscar budget, to fund some of the other initiatives. We reached them and we told them that they're not allowed to go above 5%. If they go above 5%, it becomes a logic issue and it will be reflected as such in the audit outcome. Chair, there was a question about the mechanisms that we put in place to verify what is on ground. We do it in two ways. One is there is an age assessment system which we use. And those policies that are not combined with the EHFS, we pick that up and we write to them immediately. For instance, as much as UTMK is performing well this year, we worry about their compliance with EHFS. And that's something that we want to correct as quickly as possible. We reach out to them as well. But the second part is that we, before the end of the financial year, we also appoint what we call the professional teams to do project verification. We've done project verification. We have not done the entire population of projects. We do a survey arrangement. But before the end of the year, we will do a verification of each and every project that has been reported, because we want to know whether the units that have been delivered at the project level, those units are there. So we are required to do that by law. We're required to do that by the Auditor General. So we'll appoint professional teams to go and do the verification, even in areas where there's good performance. We have to verify that work is on the ground and is just fine. So that we do every year. Then the last part was the disaster management. I will follow up on the reporting aspect. What I know is that in this province, in the Western Cape, they tend to manage the disaster management components using EHP, what we call the Emergency Housing Program. So they will probably report on it differently. Because EHP is one of the housing programs, we have about 30,000 programs. So if you don't use disaster, you use the emergency housing program, especially if it's about the upgrading of some of the houses that are affected by disaster. I would assume that this is a reporting issue. Probably reporters also, but we have not put the right mechanism to track the disaster components, treasury and markets. We do that, but we do have our own challenges with funding and appointment of new professionals within the department, because we've lost almost 54 million rand in our personnel budget in the coming 9 years. So we're trying to make sure that we prioritize the filling of some of the critical positions, because the personnel budget has gone down by almost 54 million. And then I will ask my colleague to help us with some of the specific questions about the budget. The CRU, in social housing in Limpopo, I concur with you that the city like Polokwane should prioritize social housing. There is a big demand for rental housing. But again, Limpopo has not been performing for 2 years. So there isn't a single program that has performed. But maybe going forward, once the DG and the agencies put their heads together, we will be able to package those projects in Limpopo, including social housing. I know that in 2012, they delivered the very good CRU program, the community residential units. And it was a very good, it was a hostel development, we call the CRU, replaced the whole hostel development program. They do have CRU programs that they've implemented in the past, and over the last 2 years, there isn't much that has been done in the whole
tradition. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. There was a question about overspending for KZN. Just to highlight, Chair, that the overspending reflected on the report is overspending relating to what had been transferred to them. In other words, they were spending faster than what we had transferred to them. But it has always been made clear to all provinces that no one is allowed to overspend the allocation. But what they do, because of the opportunities they have in pushing projects, they are able to speak to the provincial treasurers and spend faster on what has already been transferred to them. But stick within the total allocation for the financial year. So we are not worried about a possibility of them overspending on the total allocation. With regards to work in progress, Chair, we agree. Hence, on the interventions indicated, we have agreed with the provinces that they should provide us with information with respect to the status of their work in progress. And that as we monitor them, we'll not only look at completed units, but we'll also look at the work in progress and the amount of money which has actually gone into the work in progress. There was also a question here with regards to the USDG. I think Mr. Changana has responded to that. I just want to add, Chair, that we have also sent out letters to metros who are actually underperforming, requesting, we actually gave them 7 days to respond on why we should not stop the allocation, because they are not spending the money. Most of them have actually responded and resubmitted their explanations on how they plan to spend the money moving forward. We have also ended up having to change the transfer date and moved it backwards so that we can be able to get an indication from them and a commitment on whether they will be able to spend the allocation. And the mechanism, yes, that has been addressed in the Chair. I think that completes all the questions.
Thank you very much,
Thank you. from them.
Oh, okay.
Should say to the PC.
No problem.
On this one, the CEO of EU is going to be
done. Thank you very much. We have to go back to you.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, honorable members, for giving us the opportunity to present on this. Also, we thank the DM and also present here. Chair, Title B, I think, is an important topic for the Ministry, for the Department. And the report we're going to give is going to aim to answer some of the questions that is there regarding the backlog. So, whilst I think it's important, yes, yeah, and Chair, we're not going to go through slide by slide, we're going to try and focus on the key items. I think we all understand the mandate and the value proposition. Also, we're very aware of the goals we're trying to achieve here in the department's view on the matters. We understand vision, goal, and the purpose of this. It's important for us to know that it is so that the mandate of the Israeli Federation said that we have to eradicate this backlog of titles in the next this electoral cycle, and then we'll prioritize the issuing of titles for 94, also for the 494 stock to deal specifically with the backlog. It's important to know that of the RDP and BNG house that has been built, 1.4 million of the beneficiaries did receive the title deeds based on the report that was done in 2011. What's important to know about that, where we see there has been transactions of title deeds, about 91,000 titles that have changed hands in the proper manner through the deed registrar post the preemptive clause period, and that generated a turnover of about 12 billion rand. It's important to know, we can see on that information what was the average sales price of those units in the formal market as it's gone to the formal structures, and also how it is growing over the period. We can note that. I think it's important for us to then see what is the value proposition of title. Now, for us, from the department, from the ministry, and then and from EAB, our view is that this house that we provided to you is an asset. It's not an item that you should be trading with. Your first line position would be to use it as a poverty alleviator and a wealth creator. And our view is actually that you should retain that asset. And if there's a transaction happening, rather buy your neighbor's property, don't sell your own property. This is an asset that you can provide future wealth for your family. If we look at what we would like to see, Chair, in this market, we would like to see what is happening in the RDP market, in the BNG market now. I just want to try and provide in the current formalized market here, these blue squares are indicating the number of transactions happening in a specific area, and those blue squares, the big ones are indicating big and a large number of transactions, and the smaller ones are showing smaller transactions, less transactions, and we can see the various areas where there is a lot of activity, where transactions are going through the deep register, where buyers and sellers are selling the transactions. We can also see that those reddish, maroonish kind of colors are indicating a concentration of estate agents. And then you see in some areas again where the colors become lighter from green to beige, less estate agents there, and but there are still transactions happening. We would like to be able to provide in this restoration project similar information about the RDP market, the BNG market, to know what is actually happening in those markets. The important thing is why we are bringing the context of what is happening in the province, where the sales is, because that is going to provide us the tracking mechanisms to understand what is happening in the market. While we're also talking about state agents, the state agents are supposed to be the first housing consumer education port of call, where they have the first contact with the seller, the first contact with the buyer. The training that we will be providing to them is to provide proper housing consumer education, while the EAB and the department is also taking hands to provide the correct and more increased housing consumer education. We can also look at some of the other provinces where we can see their transactions happening in the formalized market, and we also would like to be able to track the transactions happening in the RDP market, and that is in this 5-year cycle. I would like to see what is happening with the title deeds in the specific area of RDB and the market. So that is giving us a bit of an indication of how we'll report back to the portfolio committee of what we understand is happening in that market. We're also looking at the value proposition, what are the risks and the threats. Now, informality is a big problem that we're having in the RDP market, where individuals are selling their houses and actually selling occupation by going through to a police officer or the police station and then signing documents and exchanging cash, where someone is actually saying, now I'm the legal owner of this property, and this contract is done in a very informal, so the transaction is going not through the deed office, and that is where both buyers and sellers place at risk. And obviously, until someone passed away, it is, or someone finds out that what has actually happened here was not proper, is where the challenge is. I mean, we know there's quite a lot of those transactions happening, that's why it's very important for us to continue our efforts and increase our efforts on the housing consumer education. We're also looking at the legal consequences of the informal sale, how those matters need to be dealt with. Big problems with the unresolved estate, as we expect, and that's why we're working with the Department of Home Affairs to try and understand of the beneficiaries that have received while on the housing subsidy system, those who passed on, what is the current process of their winding up of their estate and how we can help with those processes. Here again, I'm not going to go into detail. We understand that this is not the end in itself, but it's a building creation activity where if you have your title, you can formally participate in the market. Now, we are very aware of the number of units that have been delivered, and I think we're tracking it here. What we are trying to see is what are the contributing factors that is leading to this delay in the title deed itself. And we are providing information of every single province, how many units have been delivered on all of the provinces, and what is the actual backlog at a specific time in 2011 where we were able to measure these totals. And what we are now doing, Chair, is working with each of the provinces to actually determine with them what is the current state of the title deeds that they have in the backlog. Now, like making an example of Limpopo as a province, we can see that it looks like there's a very big backlog in the Limpopo province. We must understand that the province, there's quite a lot of investment of RDP house in the communal land, and there the instrument that has been used to give the security of tenure is called a PTO, permission to occupy. So we're not expecting that there will be 100% titling in that specific area, but we're also looking at interventions on how one can provide more security on the PTOs, and also to see how that can be used as an instrument to participate in the formal market. And when we're looking at our pre-94 challenges, we understand that with the municipalities, there are challenges, and it could be that there are challenges with their capability to handle the admin and the responsibility regarding these falling housing assets. Maybe municipalities are not wanting to complete this process because for them, they are currently getting rates, and those rates and tax are paid by the province. So it could be that when that land is finally transferred to the intended beneficiary, they have a risk of not receiving, or perception that they will not be receiving continued payments for recent taxes, and that could be one of the reasons that they would not want to finalize the process. Or from provincial capacity, so the transfer of this property, they are delayed due to various other items in terms of maybe skills or the relationship with the conveyance they're using, or there are other challenges, and we are going to all of those specific challenges to find out how can we support them. In terms of the rectification of the pre-94 houses, I think on the 10th there will be more details from the department in terms of that, but there are also issues with relates to race arrears and other items that are actually delaying the transfer of these, and then challenges with the traditional leaders in terms of how to formalize those councils and how one can actually work positively with them in terms of that. We also see there are certain delays in terms of proclamation of townships and the delays in conveyancing. And what we have done is to say, let's identify all the key stakeholders, and we are in consultation with all of those, with the department, with the various departments, from the Deeds Registry to the State Attorney's Office to the Surveyor General, to actually make sure we have all the key stakeholders together as we see this as the problem we should all address and solve in the process. So, Chair, if we then look at how we're looking at pre-94, it is our aim to confirm the backlog of all the various categories for the pre-94 stock within a specific time frame. for the post-94 stock to start and complete the scoping. We've already started that, to complete the scoping exercise, so we can come up and say exactly what is that amount of units that are now in the backlog. And also to look at what information are we getting out of the various pilots that we are currently busy with, a pilot in the Free State, and some we're doing with FNB. All those pilots will provide information that we can use as we are rolling out this specific project. But then also to look at the current in the pipeline project, so we don't find ourselves in a situation as municipalities and provinces are delivering units now, that in 3 or 5 years from now, we set up a new backlog. So we also try to see what policy and what difference we should bring in the current delivery to ensure that there's a sequential milestone process where titling will follow soon after that house has been actually delivered. In our view, when there is a service stamp, the process of titling can start because the superstructure is not linked to exactly that a service site that is there. Working at different policies and law reform, how can we have less complex terrain? Or we can also look at alternative tenure form. Or where we are in terms of the process, I think we've gone through various of these stages and we provided that. So in terms of our scoping exercise planning, to have that information finalized in May 2015, and currently we are busy with some pilots, but for our rollout to then commence through that process. So here we have a bit of a progress update. So the numbers is going to be the most important thing. It's important for us to know what is the exact backlog, what are the different categories, which of these need a general plan, where do we have to go back to the Surveyor General and say that this development here has got units on it, but the surveyor process is not completed. It's still registered on the registrar as a farm which has not been subdivided. To look at the institutional capacity and also look at what is going to be the cost of implementing that process. So in our discussions with the various provinces, we have asked them, what is your estimation of your backlog? And those who could give us information, saying to us very clearly that we are not saying this is cut in stone, this is what we have from our records. And we said, okay, let's start working with your pre-94 stock based on the number that you have. And you will continue with us to verify and confirm this in the scoping period. Also looking at your host 94 stock, what are you saying is your backlog? And what are the numbers that you estimate what you still have to resolve and confirm? But this process is indicative numbers, and we are now verifying these numbers with those specific individuals. I think it's important for us in terms of the specific brief of the scoping, that will come up with more clear answers that actually provide confirmation of the various backlog numbers, but also the capacity of each specific province, what additional capacity they need, and that will translate into the clear time frame and also the estimated cost. So, Chair, in the MINMEC structure, the EAB would, after it is already consulted with the HOD of the province, was already met with the HOD and the various MSCs in the various structures, with the support of the department, having present in those national steering committees, the deed registrar, so all the housing institutions that are part of this process, the Surveyor General, we would go back into MINMEC and be able to report into MINMEC numbers that the HOD of the province have already verified and confirmed, that MSCs in agreement with, and then we can report to the minister to say that these are the numbers that we have, this is the progress of that, and how do we see ourselves going through the various things. Where the support of the institutional, other government departments, the input's already been there, that the key stakeholders, like the conveyance, have provided the interface exactly where we are. And so going to MINMEC with us, that we do not have disputes in those meetings, that we've actually already created. So the steering committees are there under the leadership of the department to ensure that there's 9 steering committees, that we have a national steering committee that will feed, that will seek information out of the provincial steering committees, so that when we go into the structures, we are able to report responsibly. And this is what the composition of those steering committees will be looking like, ensuring that all of the relevant stakeholders, and if there are more, add them to those committees so we can solve the problems together. So obviously important for us, the critical success factor is to look at the total cost of registration, what policy and programs we need to do, the issues of beneficiary administration, how will we work together to solve the various challenges, how the PI Act need to put specific issues of PI into a basket and say these are the challenges that we have in this area, and we will have a plan, 10 steps to deal with that. How do we deal with the disputes between occupiers and legal owners where there's been this informal sales and there's not been 10 years that transaction happened. So we also look at project management, what professional bodies need to be part of this process, in terms of the human settlement policies, which of those instruments do we need to employ, work with them, what institution of resilience is there that we can actually deliver this, and the degree of willingness of every single participant to actually solve the problems. And we can report that we've been receiving very good support from the provinces, from national departments, from all the other stakeholders who are saying we want to participate and we're looking at solutions that can actually solve the problem. So in indicative time frames, for pre-94 SOC, we aim to have that finalized before the end of March 2017. It's important for that we know those who had those municipal houses pre-94 that have their documents finalized with them, understand where the process is, where they are worrying about certain estates in terms of the pipeline process, to ensure that we streamline whatever the implementation process is, to ensure by June 15 we understand how people are moving forward and we're not creating a new backlog. In terms of the post-94 stock, to have finalized the scoping to ensure that we can conclude this entire backlog of the title deed by March 2018, a year before the electoral cycle is completed. And what we are doing is we have these round table debates so we can solve the various problems in a collective form. So we want to also give the portfolio committee a glimpse of what we see is going to be the dashboard that we work with the chief operating officer, CEO of the department, to try and say how will we come back and say what is the progress. When we are looking at a dashboard, we will say, okay, this is the number, and these are just indicative numbers, the number of titles in the backlog that is there. Now, how many has now gone into a system where we've given those instructions from province, from a municipality, from the department, and those instructions were given to a conveyance? We also look at, and in this case also applicable, where the transfer duty issues have been dealt with. Now, these are not applicable because they're all under the threshold, but those are in that process where it's been recorded as a TD1 declaration form to be submitted. Where the rates clearance certificate, we will say how many share is currently in the process of we're dealing with a rates clearance certificate. How many of these documents have been signed by the various parties? How many have been lodged into the deed certificate to say this has to go in the name of the beneficiary, has been pressed for the document, how many has been registered, and where those title deeds have not been delivered. So that dashboard has to give us a national view. But when we look at the provincial view, we also would like to be able to provide for every single province in terms of our three scopes, the amount so many titles are in this challenge, what percentage of completion are we, and which province is leading, and where we are in terms of that. Also, as those key stakeholders, the Black Convention Association and their members who are going to play a specific role in this, we also want to measure them individually, each one knowing exactly how many days are they taking to handle this, how many days are they, how many matters are they sitting with, and which of those matters are sitting in which specific area. And we look at all the other participants of this project readiness team, if they are surveyors part of that, how far are they with their process, what is it that they need to do, how much will they do. So the dashboard, we can also break the data down in a specific province and bring exactly this slide into a province so we can know exactly how many title deeds are there. The dashboard, I think, will make members all at reporting quarterly or in these meetings, we can see the progress in terms of that. It's important for us, we've had challenges with the or people raising matters that it's taking longer to get the title process through the state attorney's office to look at what the chances, see how we can assist with those problems. So maybe just in short, for us, I think the important things in terms of the way forward is what we are seeing here, that for us the scoping exercise is going to provide us concrete answers. The steering committees are there creating them, and the members have been identified. So we're scheduling the first national steering committee in terms of that, also dealing with the beneficiary information, understanding where we have various meetings where the deeds register were created with the department fast track options, so that if there's a matter that comes into the deed office nationally and it is to do with the title deed restoration project, we're scheduling a fast track process so that we can get those titles and they will have it specifically faster through the systems, and the communication comes to the department or the province of the EAB, so we can actually fast track those numbers, or looking for very quick wins in terms of that. So I think we do feel that we have a very responsible approach. KZN have provided to us a lot of their pre-94 hostels and some of those flats here, and said, let's fictionalize those, let's put them through a structure. We're working with them, I think it's about 6,000 units that we're working through now in the pilot, where we can already go and say, the end process of this is going to be that those occupants will end up with sectionalized ownership of those hostels that they are currently staying in. In terms of the Free State, also the Kwakwa area, I think it's about 4,300 units there that we're busy with, and it's important to work with Free State to actually provide low-hanging fruit outcomes in terms of that. Also the Center for Affordable Housing and F&B, we've got specific units that we're putting through a pilot, so that information comes through that, providing us with great answers that we can come back to the committee to the department to provide. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair and committee members. If we look at what we saw on page 13 in the loan, and I would make sure I take us to slide number 13, just for the members say there. We have here an indication of information that is verified, audited, and confirmed on a report covering the period 1994 to 2009, and this information was produced in 2011. So that is giving us an indication of information at a specific stage. Now from 2009 to where we are now, maybe the word unknown is not 100% correct, but what we are saying for Gauteng is Gauteng is saying to us at the juncture as we're talking, we are not saying this is the total of our backlog. We have done a lot of issuing, but they're not saying now this is the exact number. So this is what we know. So from 2009, because obviously this is now not the backlog anymore, that issued about 400,000 in 2011, but now they have more titles that have been issued, and we're seeing this scoping exercise has not gone out there and provide information that is not 100% accurate. Now, if we understand the process, and I think this is an important one, and that's why I think the slide is quite key for here. And I think, Chair, that's the reason I wanted us to really have a look at the slide here. When you look at that round table there, there is a process. It could mean that from the province perspective, they have gone and they provided the instructions to the various conveyancing firms and those who are in various stages of where we are. And those many stages we're having there, it means it's out of the hands of the province, but it didn't come back. So the question is, which of these items are in what stage and which of that? So when we spoke to the province, the deed office, they said they've completed quite a few of these provinces. They completed some type of deeds. The challenge has been there's been a breakdown between the relationship of the conveyancer who received the instruction and the province who instructed him some 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and there are different issues which are now causing a bit of a delay. And that is why the department says, let us enter into the process and bring some clarity so we can confirm the numbers. So correctly, so the province has said to us, this is what we have in our estimation, but let's together work on actually confirm those numbers. So maybe, Honorable Ghana, it is so that we have contacts, we have members of every single province working with us to solve this matters of unknownness, to say, okay, each province is presented and represented on the provincial steering committees at the highest level, where the HOD or the delegate becomes a member. The people working with the province, and they specifically say, we are working to solve the problem. So we're not in a situation where we are trying to extract information out of them. They're unwilling. They're actually providing as much as they can. But then we say, let's rather come up with a number that we say at a specific time, which is in the way that has confirmed the numbers of the backlog. Now, you also asked the question whether we are not supposed to be issuing certain title deeds. Title deeds are being issued weekly. I think we go to some of the events where title deeds are being issued. And what they're saying, those are of the low-hanging fruit, because the work must continue out of the backlog, reducing the backlog. So that is part of what is happening. And I think we can, at the state, can bring some information about how much nationally is been going on weekly, monthly, so we can also track that information as to say how much we have already been provided. But I think the important thing is we want to be able to say, when we look at every single stage in the scoping exercise, and a problem set was, I have given to 4, 5, 6 conveyances the following number of transactions, where is that information? And on the other side, looking from the various deed office to say, you receive the following instructions. Now, at the end of the day, I think the only thing that can confirm to us a number is when we have matched the ID numbers of beneficiaries, intended beneficiaries, against the deed registrar nationally, and that confirms to us, yes, beneficiary. We also have working on getting the information from Home Affairs, and that will also confirm which of those specific beneficiaries have part on, and their matters would be now part of the master's process of winding up the estate. And that is why I think we have to do some of the stuff through a consolidated process and then work at the same time on working on detailed processes, so those detailed processes can actually provide it for us the correct processes, so that we have the right information as we work through them. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. I think we must also remind ourselves that the issue of the title deed is continuing, but the backlog is what we worry about. And remember, the EAD was given responsibility by the minister on the 28th of October when she came to report on the 100 days. And therefore, I think what we need to agree upon is that there is progress in terms of what they were, because they were given this task on the 28th of October. And they are coming to us now in February to give to tell us how far they've gone. I think that's give credit to them. Thank you very much for the progress, but we now, when you come back, we want a better progress, which now tells us in numbers how far and what is happening in the process. But I think so far, we're quite happy with what you said, because that's what we wanted to know. We wanted to know if the project in place and what is happening. And thank you very much. And I think now we are moving to the third presentation, which is the DMI.
Thank you.
Thank you.
to note that the CEO of the three entities are here as well, Ralph, MHSC, and NACHA, and they're here. And I will add where we are required to work. Over to you.
Thank you very much, CEO and Professor. The presentation that we'll provide today is on the progress that the department has made in terms of the amalgamation of the development finance institutions of the department, that is our entities. I'll move on to the outline. Safe to say that this is a process that has started in the department since 2009 when the government took a decision that they would amalgamate all the development finance institutions inclusive of those that the human settlement has, currently and has had in the past. At the moment, the process has undergone numerous stages where the department took the decision that yes, we'll amalgamate the DFIs in the department, and within that process, we'll take cognizance of the respective legislation that determines the establishment and disestablishment of public entities within the public sector, and in terms of that, also observing the National Treasury and the Department of Public Service and Administration guidelines in so doing. And what the department has therefore embarked on doing is that before the consolidation of these entities, we embarked on an operational and legislative due diligence of all the three DFIs in the department, and with that, that resulted into a business case that which is where we are at the moment in terms of finalizing the business model for this consolidation of the DFI. Our background is that the housing sector is supported by three DFIs, the National Housing Finance Corporation, the Rural Housing Loan Fund, and the National Urban and Reconstruction and Housing Agency, NACHA. And these DFIs were created by the department with the intention of promoting social and economic development in the specialized areas of operation. These entities operate in various areas where the RALF operates in terms of issuing intermediary finance in terms of incremental housing for rural areas, mainly, and secondary cities, and also for those beneficiaries that live on communal land where they cannot have access to permanent tenure and therefore are not able to access housing finance. The NETA operates in terms of providing access to finance to contractors through certificate-based lending, especially within the subsidized market, and also the NHFC that provides contractor financing and project financing for affordable and rental stock. Following the treasury review, the department then undertook an investigation into finance delivery mechanisms for the human settlement sector. And thereby, also as I indicated, taking that decision in line with the treasury review to amalgamate the three entities with the existing expertise and capacity within those entities. That means also we are taking cognizance that we need to preserve that expertise that exists currently in those entities as we amalgamate them, but also trying to create more efficiencies in terms of the various niche markets within which they operate. What the department realized was that as much as we are having these three DFIs that are servicing three different markets, they do not have much of an impact in terms of scale of what they could lend if their balance sheet were to be amalgamated, therefore being able to leverage much of the financing in private sector and from government as well, so that they can lend more and create more lending and more impact in terms of their areas of operation. Accordingly, it's proposed that the Human Settlement and Development Finance Institution will be established, thereby consolidating the three entities, and I've indicated a chairperson, basically to increase and scale up the impact that we require within the affordable, the incremental, and also in terms of the contractor lending for our subsidized housing programs. Also, as part of this amalgamation, the department has recently determined that the investment function of the Social Housing Regulatory Authority will not necessarily be transferred to the consolidated DFI, but through an agency basis will be contracted to the Human Settlement Development Finance Institution so that they can then be able to create the synergies in terms of the disbursing of the RCG grant to the social housing institutions through the newly consolidated institution. Where are we to date? I've indicated that in 2008 through the treasury review, it has been recommended that we amalgamate the DFIs of the department, and so doing, then a department took that decision in 2009 to continue and align with other government programs and consolidate the human settlement DFIs. And that review also started in March, I think the date there. The operational due diligence was conducted, and the legal due diligence as well, looking into the three entities separately and looking at what synergies they've got and why it's the rationale that we need to take into consideration their amalgamation. Currently where we are at present in terms of developing the business case for this new entity that we envisage. And that is an ongoing process where the business case has been finalized, which also includes the SHRA part in terms of it becoming a service of the RPG disbursement coming in outsourced to the NHSC. That has been also included. So at a stage where the business case has been formulated, and now it is being consulted with our stakeholders internally as well as within the three entities that we are having as DFIs. The process, as I have indicated, is that it's a process that follows a three-stage approach, three-phase approach, whereby at the beginning was the phase one, which we embarked on the operational and the legal due diligence, whereby there was a research and analysis of the operations and the legal aspects of all these three entities. And from that, a business case has been developed with options that I'll later present in terms of the best model that we'll then be utilizing to merge the three entities into one human settlement DFI. The second phase was that of the business case and consolidation of the nurture and route into the NHSC as per the minister's mandate. The business case has been concluded as indicated. At the next stage now is that of consultations with our internal stakeholders, our sector departments, our three entities, as well as a process whereby the business case will then be approved by the minister and then presented to the joint evaluation panel. And then after that, then brought back again to the portfolio committee and to cabinet for approval. And then the third part of it would then be, which would be concurrent processes, would be the consolidation of the two entities, NERCA and RALF, into the NHSC, whereby then it will run parallel with also phase three, which is that of the formal establishment and support of the entities through an enabling legislation and acts of Parliament. With the research that was done, it was found that given that in the housing sector or in South Africa as whole, the 10 million households are earning less than 10,000 per month, of which an estimated 7 million of which qualify for subsidy housing. Therefore, what that means is that those that earn between 3,500 and 10,000 have limited access to subsidies and finance available. And there are about 2.2 million households living in informal settlements, including backyard rentals and informal settlements. And therefore, this significant housing gap, there's a significant housing gap that includes those that are earning below 15,000, a limited new formal housing stock for ownership for households with income between 3,500 and 10,000. And what this means is that this gap market also has indicated that there is a need for servicing of all these beneficiaries in these markets that the government can currently not service. Therefore, the rationale behind the amalgamation is that it's based on the rights that are included in the Constitution, whereby all South Africans have a right to access adequate housing. And this is a government is obliged to take all reasonable legislative and other measures to make this a right a realization. And currently, there are housing policy frameworks that underpinned by a range of interventions, and that also indicates that with the three DFIs, there will be more capital that is provided for people to have access to housing. Also, we are aware that today government has delivered in excess of 2 million houses, but there is a need to focus on quality rather than just the quantitative results of the housing that has been provided. Therefore, in terms of the revised housing finance strategy, there's a requirement that there should be a significant expansion on the number of levels of overall human settlements that are needed to be met. and in particular, there's a need to substantially mobilize increased private secured credit to households for housing, and the provision of increased unsecured housing finance and the mobilization of household savings and contributions, as well as to maximize the leverage of government housing finance and assets. The revised housing and finance strategy therefore strongly indicates the need to build on as well as rationalize and coordinate the efforts of existing capacity of the Union Settlement DFIs as well as other public entities and DFIs. The case for the consolidation of the DFIs is that a single Union Settlement Development Finance Institution has been approved by the department that will provide a sufficient capitalization and the ability to mobilize the necessary funding within their respective lending sectors. And therefore, the core right now resides also in the need to provide effective government financing that will support key segments of the housing market in the face of considerable market failure and significant needs within the affordable and rental market space. The rationale for such an entity is such that it would ensure that existing institutional capacity is retained within all the three DFIs and will realize synergies and effective cost savings when they are merged together, and then those maximize their balance sheet capabilities, whereby with a bigger balance sheet they can be able to leverage more funding in the private sector and be able to create economies of scale in terms of the delivery of housing units in their respective lending markets. Also, to realize and strengthen the mandate and authority of the Human Settlement DFI. And to make this a realization, the NHFC and the RALF will then be amalgamated into the Beleta and the RALF will then be amalgamated into the NHFC to form the single development finance institution. And thereby, this will result in improved policy and functional alignment, operational economies of scale as well indicated, and optimal financing resource allocation. It will also improve in terms of the conduciveness to innovation and expansion of the human settlement finance provision. I've indicated, Chairperson, that the consolidated DFI will be structured in such a way that it would include the investment function of the Social Housing Regulatory Authority, thereby creating an opportunity for a one-stop shop in terms of the financing of the affordable housing and social housing as well as rental housing. What this would therefore mean for the Social Housing Regulatory Authority is that it would therefore remain primarily with its regulatory and capacity building function, and the RCG would then be transferred through an outsourced a contract to the NHFC or the new entity to perform that function. The current legislative mandate would include administering and restructuring of the capital grant for the SHRA, would then be transferred over to the NHFC in terms of disbursement. The role of the new DFI is to provide effective government financing support to key segments of the market in terms of significant lending. Given the policy mandate as well as identified needs of the sector, the core functions of the Human Settlement DFI will be to provide unsecured finance, to provide mortgage debt financing, rental housing development finance, and to provide development finance for reticulation and link infrastructure, as well as provision of contractor and developer support. And we will also continue lending in terms of the intermediary incremental housing as well. Also, in terms of the high investment function, that would be as a core function, that would also be a part of the function of the new DFI. There are various options that were considered in terms of the nature of the DFI that should be chosen by the department as per the business case that has been put together. And the information that was considered, as I indicated, is part of the operational and the legal due diligence, and also looking at what kind of legal form would this new entity take or would we adopt in terms of this new entity. The various options that were looked at was that there was a program service delivery and government component, which would mean that if then we formed it in terms of the 1-3 options, it would mean that entity would form part of the department and become a government component. And that was not deemed to be required in terms of the governance of an entity and in terms of us, the formation of this entity that would require, because we want to be able to raise funding and also to be able to facilitate market innovation and attract and retain that skills within the sector. And we believe that that could be better done if this entity would become a public entity and registered in terms of the CFMA so that it can be able to borrow and lend effectively within a within the sector in which it could be operating. Therefore, what we are saying is that we have said that we have opted for option 4, where this entity would become a public entity that would be established through enabling legislation and an act of parliament. It's not currently possible, as we indicated, to provide an overview of the provisions of legislation, as it has not yet been developed. It's still at an infant stage. That would provide that in the next progress reporting, what kind of a legislation and form this entity would fully take in terms of the legal process. The option analysis has indicated that the government business enterprise be established, that would be a Section 3D entity. That would ensure that the mandate and capacity, it would have the mandate and capacity to raise external funding and also be able to invest surplus funding directly in its own activities. And the entity would also be tax exempt, enabling greater investment. At the moment, it's only one of the entities throughout that is tax exempt, and it is hoped that by amalgamating all three entities, we'll create a tax exempt entity that will have a greater, enable greater investment of the surplus that it has into other programs. The practical establishment of the DFI, we have identified two options of implementation. Whereby the first option, we are saying that it can be, the entity remains as they are until a new legislation is established, whereby we are saying the three entities can remain as they are and can start with the establishment or the drafting of the legislation that will then give effect to the consolidation. However, that would take a longer process because we know that the drafting and approval of legislation takes anything between 18 to 24 months, so it could take longer. But the other option that we're having currently is that we in the meantime, consolidate the two entities, the RALF and the NETRA, into the HFC so that it becomes one legal entity. And through buy and sell agreements, which NHFC would therefore buy the business of both the NETRA and the RALF, and that would take a process of about 6 months for those agreements to be put in place, and for the entities to be amalgamated or integrated into one. While in the meantime, then we then look forward to the long term, whereby we'll then draft new legislative framework that will then govern the final DFI. In the meantime as well, we'll also look into the issue of outsourcing the disbursement of the RCG that is currently done by the CRA through an outsource agreement with the NHFC. I've indicated that currently the restructuring capital grant mandate resides with the SHRA, but in terms of repositioning the mandate of the movement assessment DFI, this would then be outsourced to the new DFI, and the disbursement grant and SHRA would remain mainly as a regulator and capacity builder in terms of the social housing institution. We're still looking into how that would affect the current legal composition of the SHRA, whether it would require restructuring of the SHRA Act or not, but that is what we're currently looking into in the long term. Hence the outsourcing arrangement that we have come up with to say that instead of restructuring the legislation, let's look at whether the outsourcing would work best before. In terms of the delivery model, what is envisaged is that the three entities would be merged into one, and the current mandate of these entities would find expression whereby the NHFC would still find its expression in terms of project financing as well as incremental finance. And then NHFC would find its current mandate would find expression in terms of the developer finance component, and that of the RALF would find expression in terms of the incremental finance. So in essence, what we're trying to say is that as much as we are merging the three DFI together, their mandates will still remain so that they are able to service the current sectors within which they are financing. In terms of the model as well, what we have also realized is that there would be the human resource implications. an initial assessment of the human resource structures of the three institutions as well as that of the investment function of the shrine has been undertaken. And what that has indicated is that the current organizational structures show 80 employees in the NHSC, 42 in NECA and 13 in ZALT, and 3 in the shrine's investment function, which would then give a total of 123 employees altogether if these functions were to all be merged together. So what would this mean is, therefore means is that we are aware that there would be overlaps in terms of certain positions, and those would total 15 positions as identified where synergies could be achieved. We, however, do not want to really build much on the value, the monetary value of savings that these positions would bring about. But what we would want to look at is how these overlapping positions would create more value and synergies in terms of the new institution that will be formed. And also bearing in mind that we would also want to retain the current capacity and expertise of these entities and hoping that there would be no retrenchment as a result of the amalgamation. I indicated that the consolidation of the institutions should therefore provide the opportunity for more effective utilization of the resources. And it is unlikely that the consolidation would necessarily result in the rationalization of employed positions, but rather the redeployment of key individuals so that they could result in a more effective organizational structure. In terms of the financial implications, what we have realized through the business planning process is that a forecast consolidated income for the human settlement DFI would be a revenue over 500 million with operating costs of 250. That these figures are based on the projections and forecasts that have been made in the current business plans of the three DFIs. And that there would be net consolidated profits for the immense entity that would increase, and that would be more than 27 million before tax, with total cost of 2 million in head by NHSC and the RALF. And that the consolidated income ratio would then be approximately 44% of the overall operating cost and revenue of the three entities amalgamated. What in essence we're trying to illustrate is that the new human settlement DFI must achieve primarily two objectives, in that it must be self-sustaining and at the same time it must continue to achieve its social and economic development impact. Also what we are recommending is that the capital and funding model of this consolidation needs to be sufficient and appropriate so that it enables the consolidation to achieve the objective of on an ongoing basis. In that there has to be appropriate initial capitalization of the entity through the state budget cycle, appropriate sources of ongoing income from lending activities, investment activities, and fees for services rendered. We must indicate that the department at this point has the opportunity to determine the scale of impact of the institution itself in terms of the amount of capital injection that will also be provided to this entity in order for it to be able to leverage more in the private sector and also to create through that its legislation, its sustainability model. The implementation plan as it is that there will be an establishment of this entity requires the draft and passing of legislation for its establishment. I have indicated in terms of the legislation that needs to be drafted and approved by cabinet for the functioning of the entity. This legislation will therefore specify the functions, the governance, and other key aspects that would be necessary for its efficient and effective functioning. A two-step implementation process is recommended, which will also include the outsourcing of the SHRA function as indicated there. The first step will therefore be the amalgamation of the RALF and the NHR into the NHSC, and thereby converting that entity into a single DFI, and then that will then be followed by the enabling legislation. I've gone through that three-step process. The step one, as I indicated, would be that the merger of the three entities into the existing NHSC through appropriate legal agreements, which are the binding agreements, where we transfer the current assets and liabilities and other contractual liabilities of the NHSC and RALF into the NHSC. And then the second step would therefore be the commencing of the voluntary liquidation of the two remaining DFI shell companies. And then the third step will be that we'll then go into a situation where we'll then concurrently draft legislation and take it through the various stages for it to be approved, as well as transfer the legal mandate of the restructuring bank from the SHRA to the new entity. Finally, Chairperson, this is just a depiction of where we are currently and how what are the steps that would then follow or are necessary to follow in terms of us concluding the entire process of the consolidation. The first yellow square, Chairperson, indicates that the process where we are currently in terms of a business case, that has been finalized, and now the next step is where we have to conclude on our consultations so that we can have the final business case that will then be approved by the Minister and submitted to a joint evaluation panel. And we are hoping that that process of approval of the business case will happen by the end of March this current financial year. And from then on, then we'll then submit the policy to the joint evaluation panel. We'll then continue with the consultations with our three DFIs, with our sector departments, Treasury, the DME, as well as the public service. In terms of the business case and the establishment of the new entity, we are also at a process where we are developing a policy foundation for this new DFI that would then inform the operations after we have amalgamated the functions, and also as a foundation for the drafting of the legislation. We are hoping, Chairperson, that the amalgamation will then take place effectively between March and May, in the new financial year, April and May to June, in the new financial year, through those buy and sell agreements. We hope that they would be concluded in July, and then that would give effect to the formal and legal amalgamation of the three entities into the NHSC. And that is a process that the entities themselves will also be involved and being able to manage, while the department would look for a change management specialist to oversee that process. Concurrently, also we'll then be engaging on a process of drafting the legislation, and also ensuring that that legislation being drafted is completed by August 2015, and also be included in the legislative program for approval in 2016 and 2017. And in the meantime, then, Chairperson, we're saying we are hoping that while we are drafting the legislation, we'll continue with the consultative processes and submission of the business case to the portfolio committee, as well as the draft legislation as well for tabling as a draft bill in Parliament. And we're hoping that that legislation will be tabled in Parliament in September, between September 2015 and November 2016. That is the legislative program. But we will have it fully on the legislative program for 2016-17 for approval. And I think having said that, Chairperson, I'm here with the colleagues from the three entities, as well as my colleagues within the department. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that clear progress report on the implementation of the DFI. So we are currently on stage two. And with all the time frame that we think is good, I think one of the things that is making us probably comfortable with the fact that the whole process doesn't interfere with the current functioning of the DFI right now. Yeah. So that's the company. Clarity and questions from the committee? Honorable Ngana Tamash?
Thank you very much for the presentation. I'm on slide 19 on the option. I'm tempted to support option 2, but I would like to for you, the team, to unpack to me check in relation to the takeover of assets and liabilities on option 2. Before. To me, it's like on the slide number 24 to 27, we are responding to that, but it's based on the option now.
not based on option 2 so that we can differentiate. If we take option 2, what is in for us? And the number one is that if we take option 2 without the unpacking of the taking over of assets and liabilities without the legislation securing that, what would be the implications of that? I think it's true.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? I'm not sorting it out. Because we don't have any. I think to make sure. I think you may respond to that question too. Of course, I did hear you that we are opting for option 2. So, but maybe I think it's better. Right? Because that's what I understood you saying, that we are fewer options.
If I may respond, Madam Chair. Firstly, option 1 says that you actually create a new entity altogether where you go through the legislative route to set it up, and once you've done that, then you take all three with them into that. But option 2 says there's an existing entity which, in terms of time frames, you want to do this as soon as possible. Now, in view of that, what you are proposing in that regard is that the assets of the other two entities be sold to an existing entity, which will be quicker in terms of time frames, but also it will be achievable based on the time frames that my colleague actually outlined here. So that is the recommended option, that route being the easiest to take, but also it will achieve the same objective because option 2 has two parts to it. Firstly, is the consolidation of these two into a single entity of the NHFC, but then you still need that enabling legislation, which will be the later process. So in the end, the outcome is the same, but your approach has been different. You took speed into consideration, but also the efficiency and effectiveness into consideration as you did the two steps of stage 2. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It will, if you look at this macro, as we go, we will understand it better. Mm. Remember, this is for us a learning. We have not done it before, including the Department of Health. So we will all learn together and get it to be expert as we move forward. Thank you very much for that. I am not going to allow you on a recommendation. I tried to score for comments and they were not. Now I'm about to close the meeting on a recommendation. I know that you, whatever you would have to send to them, help, but it will help in the next time. Right now, I just wanted to make that announcement so that everybody understands. There's been a request from the department that the portfolio committee meeting must move from 9 to 10. The reason being that if they have officials that are traveling from out there to come to us, they must start in the morning rather than start the day before, so that they have the cost information. So that's why the committee is now sitting at 10 instead of 9. So that nobody comes here for excursion and don't want to fly. No water line now. Come in the morning, take to the committee. When the committee is finished, take to the airport, go there to house. So that's why the committee meeting has been moved. I wanted people to understand that, so that we don't get confused why we have moved from it. We jumped, we thought that one is very clean proposal. We can't even let it be debated. It helps us a lot, so we agree. So the meeting is really the thing. Thank you very much. That takes us then to the end of the meeting. Thank you very much for attendance, and thank you very much for all the presentation. Thank you, Deputy Minister, for creating this policy and speaking to us. We will be seeing each other the next time. Thank you. We'll meet you.
Thank you. I don't have one night on with him.